Because I'm pretty for certain the fine folks I ran into and mingled with outside of the Mercedes-Benz Superdome late last night, they are probably not up right now, and because they were enjoying themselves, if you know what I mean. Tremendous victory for the New Orleans Saints. They kick off the season, first of all, by winning a season opener. Bravo for them for that. Their first season opener victory, season opening victory since 2013. But they do so in dramatic fashion. I'm Raymond Parsh III. I am your host. Louis Prejean is the new producer extraordinaire. And we are broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also simulcast on Stadium Network 32.1. And you can find us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. We got a lot to get to on today's program. Raging Cajun football game week discussion, LSU Tiger game week discussion, and much, much more. But Louis, hit me with that clip one more time. Give it to me. I want to hear the winner one more time. I want to hear Will Lutz go out there and drill that 58-yarder one more time.
Ray, I want to hear your reaction to when that field goal happened, because we haven't had a chance to talk about this. And I'm about to pull up the clip. It's
Well, you can't. Well, you're not supposed to cheer in the press box.
No.
Okay, that's frowned upon. Now, I will be completely transparent. There was a lot of folks cheering in that press box last night inside the Mercedes-Benz Superdome. The lady beside me, who was sitting in the press box, she stood up and cheered. And so did some of the Superdome press box staff members. So there was some cheering going on in the press box. You couldn't really hear it, though, because of how loud the Mercedes-Benz Superdome was. Will Lutz goes out there. It was a crazy sequence the last minute of the game, because Deshaun Watson brought the Texans down, bang, bang. Lutz hits the one field goal to give them a six-point lead. Watson just comes down. He hits DeAndre Hopkins down the left sideline. Boom, they're in business. And then he hits Kenny Stills, the former New Orleans Saint, who was just brought over in a trade with the Miami Dolphins for the Houston Texans. He hits him across the middle. Go-ahead touchdown. The Texans have no timeouts, and they didn't need them. They just went right down and scored. But they left too much time on the clock, because Drew Brees and company just needed three passing plays to get into field goal range. You saw it because you're in the press box, you're watching the game, and you saw where Ted Ginn had that last catch at, Louis, and it was short of Will Lutz's range. Like, you could also watch it up on the screen, the TV broadcast, and you saw what, you know, the imaginary line, and it said field goal range right there. And Ted Ginn was about a yard and a half short, and you're like, oh, he didn't get far enough. He didn't get far enough, and you're thinking, oh. And Lutz had missed a field goal earlier in the game. He went right out there and just booted it straight through. Place just erupted. Here is Will Lutz's game-winning field goal once again.
A hero here for these fans. 58-yard attempt for the win! Got it!
Just phenomenal for him to be able to go out there and kick that bad boy like he did. This is what the man himself, the Saints field goal kicker, had to say about that moment. He knew the kick was good as soon as it left his foot. He knew it almost immediately. He was that confident in it. As soon as his foot touched that ball, he knew that it was going to go through.
Yeah, I mean, I was pretty confident in that kick. Like I said, our operation works so hard. You know, between Zach and Thomas, they make my job easy. And I told them after my first miss that I wasn't going to miss again. And I truly felt that wherever the ball was, I was going to give it a chance. And we were able to get it done.
Knew it was good as soon as he kicked it. Obviously, he gives credit to his long snapper and to his holder. That's what a good kicker should do, obviously. Will Lutz was asked in the moments afterwards, first of all, big up kicker, getting some love, right? I mean, he's the hero. But how many times do we see the kicker in the postgame press conference? They made Drew Brees. Drew Brees was in there. Sean Payton was in there. But Will Lutz, it was his moment to shine, so to speak. He talked about ranking where this moment, kicking a 58-yard game-winning field goal as time expires in the Mercedes-Benz Superdome on Monday Night Football. What does that mean to him? Where does that moment rank for him?
You know, I think that's the preparation throughout the week. Obviously, I'm confident in what I do. I'm confident in my operation. I knew with 37 seconds left that we were going to have an opportunity to get, you know, at least close to field goal range. And, you know, in that situation, there's not a single kick I turned down. And, you know, and like we talk about the ebbs and flows of a game, the first half didn't go my way. And, you know, that's what this game's all about, is bouncing back and be able to have your teammates have your back and make a kick like that. That's got to be a top one moment for me.
Top one moment. I think it's going to be a top one moment for a lot of Saints fans. And that's the thing, right? You go and it's so weird how this works. It's a close game. This was a scoreless game after the first quarter, okay? Drew Brees threw a rare red zone interception, his first in the red zone since 2017. He did not throw an interception last year at all through the first 7 weeks. He throws one in the first half. They're in the red zone. It was just an awful throw. It was an awful throw. Love number nine. Love Brees. He recovered from it. Had a monstrous game. Well over 300 yards. Once again, 370 yards passing. But it was a terrible throw. When you got a defensive lineman intercepting your pass, yeah, that's a bad thing. And we'll get to a lot more about this game and about Brees and about unsung hero like Alvin Kamara, who bailed them out again and again, especially in the second half with tough runs and some catches. But the night belongs to Will Lutz. And here's a guy, once again, sequence of events. Their drive stalls. Lutz goes out there, kicks the field goal, gives them a 6-point lead. The only thing the defense has to do is hold. The defense did not hold. They go to that prevent defense, which drives me absolutely bananas. You play defense a certain way the whole game. Have confidence in your defense. Have confidence that those guys will be able to make the play to stop the game. Have confidence that they will be able to do that. That's why you pay them for. Coaches, stop going to the damn prevent defense. For crying out loud, it does not work. The old saying is, it prevents you from winning. Because what you do when you go to prevent defense, you leave everything underneath open. And both teams did it. Because the Saints went to a prevent defense. Deshaun Watson, who, by the way, was sensational last night. Absolutely sensational. Hits DeAndre Hopkins, who you can argue is the number one or number two wide receiver in the game of football right now. The other guys can't guard Mike. He plays for the Saints. You've heard of him. He's going to win that matchup. He beat Marshawn Lattimore all night. He beat anyone that was guarding him. It was on him as a defender. It did not matter. Watson, boom, zip, done. Already in position. And then he hits Kenny Stills right across the top. They burned like 10 seconds off the clock. 7 seconds the Texans needed. Boom, boom, done. Stop playing prevent defense. For the love of baby Jesus, stop doing it. And sure enough, the Saints have one timeout. Will Lutz gets the field goal, and you feel the crowd, and the crowd's like, yes, we're going to win. We're going to win a season opener. Yes! And then, oh, God. the defense just gave up that score? Is there enough time? Does Drew have enough time? You could hear the crowd chattering amongst themselves. Oh, is that going to be enough time for Drew? And that's exactly what Drew needed. If the Texans would have ran one more play on their touchdown drive before the game-winning field goal, there's no game-winning field goal. That's how close it was. If the Texans would have ran one more play on their touchdown drive, there would not have been enough time for Drew Brees and company to be able to set up for that game-winning field goal. Plain and simple. It's funny how this game works. If the Texans, you're going down, you're like, we got to score. Boom. We're scoring a touchdown. We're winning this game. And it sure did seem that way for a second. But they gave Drew just enough time. Just enough time. And the Texans decided to go into a prevent defense themselves when a field goal loses the game, which is even more moronic for you to play that type of defense. Three underneath throws in a row. Breeze, connect, first down. Breeze, connect, first down. Breeze, not quite a first down, but enough to get it into 58-yard field goal range for Will Lutz, who came out there like it was nobody's business. I thought for sure there'd be a bit of a delay. Like, Lutz, I looked up and I said, he must have sprinted out there because he was ready to kick that damn ball and went right out there and just drilled it. And there was no, soon as he kicked it, from our vantage point in the press box, he kicked it half a second. The ball is still traveling through the air. I didn't even have to look up at the Jumbotron on that side of the Superdome to know that it was going to be good because I saw on the field and I saw Will Lutz start putting his arms up and you knew, game over. Game over. Will Lutz, hero, 58-yard field goal. Oh, it sounded so good the first time. It sounded even better the second time. Oh, Lewis, give it to us for a third time. Give the folks out there listening a third listen to the Will Lutz game-winning field goal.
A hero here for these fans. 58-yard attempt for the win! Got it!
Yes. Will Lutz, 58-yard field goal to win it for the New Orleans Saints. And for any of you Saints fans out there that didn't watch it on television or didn't listen to it live right here on 103.7 The Game, courtesy of Westwood One, well, shame on you. I don't want to hear your excuse that you had to wake up early to go to work. I did. Hell, I drove to New Orleans to go cover that game. I'm back. But I'm not going to judge you too much. Don't feel too bad. Don't be embarrassed. Because we're going to dissect this game front to back on today's show. That way, when you do run into your coworkers, if you do talk to your father-in-law, if you do talk to your friend, you'll know exactly what happened because RP3 and company is going to take care of you when it comes to the Saints season opening win. Will Lutz, 58-yarder to win it, ladies and gentlemen. We'll dive deeper in to the season opening victory for the New Orleans Saints over the Houston Texans. After this quick timeout, you're listening to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. I am your host, Raymond Parch III. We are broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also simulcast on Stadium Network 32.1. That's free over-the-air 24-hour sports coverage. You can also find us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. Good morning to you, Hoodats! Woo! Appreciate you making us part of your morning. Some of you probably only are working, trying to operate on a few hours of sleep. So, by all means, be careful out there today as you make your morning commute to work and to school. Others, I have a funny feeling some of you out there haven't even gone to sleep yet. It's that kind of Monday night football opener for the New Orleans Saints inside the raucous Mercedes-Benz Superdome. Saints pull out the victory. Sean Payton. You know, in the Sean Payton era, for whatever reason, they struggle in season openers. Remember last year? They're at home, and they lost to the Fitz Magic. You remember that? The bearded wonder that is Ryan Fitzpatrick playing for suspended Jameis Winston lights up the Saints for more than 400 yards as the Saints lose a shootout at home to the Tampa Bay Bucks. They just struggle in season openers. Had not won one since 2013 and have lost more than have won season openers under Sean Payton, a guy who is a meticulous planner, organizer, prepares with the best of them. Same thing for his quarterback. But for whatever reason, they're always off. And it looked early on that that was going to be the case again. Scoreless first quarter. Once again, I already talked about Drew Brees throwing the rare red zone interception, his first since 2017. Once again, he had not thrown an interception at all last season until week seven, through the first 7 weeks of the season. Sorry, not until week eight. Through the first 7 weeks of the season of 2018, Drew Brees did not throw an interception. He threw one in the first quarter last night. And you're like, oh, they're leaving points. Brees started getting hot. Now, he started pretty hot, 6 of 8, I want to say, or 7 of 8 to begin the game for like 66 yards. A little dinking and dunking, finding his wide receivers. Got Jared Cook involved early. Of course, got Michael Thomas involved, everything like that. But they struggled. They only had a field goal at half. That was it. Deshaun Watson and company, meanwhile, they were rolling. 14-3 lead at the half. Bill O'Brien teams had only lost three times under his tenure as the head coach when leading at halftime. But then the Saints flipped it in the third. Latavius Murray had that 30-yard touchdown run, which was just a thing of beauty. Then Taysom Hill was on the receiving end of a 9-yard touchdown pass from Drew Brees. Side note real quick. He's not the future franchise quarterback. Taysom Hill fans, just saying. Love him. Love the guttiness. Love the fact that he's a Swiss Army knife. He's not a future franchise quarterback. Great player. Gutty player. Great guy to have on the team. But not there. They turn things around in the third quarter. Brees gets hot. He nearly got to 300 yards passing by the end of the third quarter. And then they just turned things around there in the fourth. Huge play in the game was at the end of the third quarter. Watson and Hopkins, they tried to make it the connection again. It was nearly unstoppable all game. Williams picks off Watson there on the sideline to give the Saints a short field. But more importantly, he also gets called because Watson's pass gets intercepted by Williams, and that's one thing. You're like, oh! But then DeAndre Hopkins essentially suplexed poor Williams onto the ground. 15-yard unnecessary roughness penalty set up even a shorter field. Saints take advantage, score a touchdown. That was kind of the turning point of the game. Texans commit a rare turnover. Watson had been sensational up until that point. Immensely efficient, and that kind of turned the tide for the Saints. Sean Payton, this is what he had to say about Deshaun Watson's performance.
Well, he's a very good player. He's so versatile. You know, he can throw the ball from the pocket. You see what happens when he's able to get out of the pocket. Obviously, he's a good athlete, so he can get yardage with his legs, but just his ability to create. You know, you saw him create on some third longs. And they were able to get out of some tough situations because of his versatility.
That was Drew Brees giving love to the other guy across the field, Deshaun Watson. they had themselves a heck of a battle, especially there on those last two drives, last few drives, actually. We'll talk more about the Saints' big victory. You can give us a call on the ARCO Equipment Hotline, 337-706-0111. Saints fans, tell us what you think about what you saw last night. More Saints season opener coming up next, right here on the Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
You know, being able to get our players in and clean some of those mistakes up before we go on and trying to do that in a quick period of time will be something we'll have to do. But, you know, they fought and they hung in there, and we ended up, obviously, with a huge kick at the end by Will and a good win.
Huge kick at the end. That's one way of saying that, when your kicker comes up there and kicks a 58-yard field goal to win the game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. Hootats, how you feeling this morning? I want to hear from you. Tell me what you think about that game. Tell me what you think about what you saw from Drew Brees and Will Lutz kicking that game-winning field goal. Do so by giving us a holler on the ARCO Equipment Hotline, 337-706-0111. That's 337-706-0111. Drew Brees had the sluggish start. Throws the early red zone interception, ends up throwing for 370 yards, including making three completions on that final drive to set up Will Lutz's 58-yard field goal attempt. Will Lutz overcomes missing an earlier field goal to become the hero. Michael Thomas and Ted Ginn Jr. both went over 100 yards receiving. Oh, and Alvin Kamara just sneakily 160-plus yards of total offense from him. He had a bunch of tough runs there and a couple of key catches in the second half to help them rally to a victory. Oh, it's time for us to head out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline. I know our next caller. It's the one and only. It's Doc. Doc, good morning to you, brother. How are you doing today?
Doing well, right? Doing well. Just, I guess, basking in the glow. Supposing, you know, it's the only way to describe it. It was a nice way to end the, I guess, the football week, especially the way Sunday went. I thought that was the best game of the week, personally.
It was a tremendous, you're probably right there, the best game of the weekend, especially for the NFL slate. And if you're an LSU fan or a Cajuns fan, and you're also a Saints fan, which 99% people
sure,
are,
yeah,
it's a tremendous way, brother.
Yep. I guess the one thing I'm going to say is, you know, I think we'd all worried about how Drew's shoulder was going to work our last. And I got to say, that's the one thing I think, if there's anything I would be worried about this year, I think I didn't see the same zip on the ball. And he almost looked like he underthrew some people.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know if I was the only one that maybe saw that or I think generally other than that, everything was pretty good. I don't have any other things to complain about, but
well, Doc, let me jump on that real. I want to keep you on the line, and what Doc is saying, a little bit of the zip. You started noticing it last year, right? In the second half of the season,
yeah.
You started noticing, and we noticed a lot of times. And I was there for the majority of those games. You noticed the wide receivers started figuring out to come back to the ball, Michael Thomas especially,
yeah.
And him and Brees have such a great rapport that Thomas knows how to position his body in a way to make it easier on Drew. Look, he's getting older. You eventually lose the zip on the ball. I mean, we saw it firsthand with Peyton Manning. Now, I don't think Drew is going to hit what Manning hit, where all of a sudden Peyton couldn't hit a 15-yard out route anymore. Like, his arm just couldn't throw the ball that way. He just couldn't do it anymore. But you are starting to see a little bit of a slowdown in the arm strength. Exactly. You are seeing that, Doc. That's a right assessment there. And you could see it last night. There's a little bit,
yeah, I mean,
there's going to be a little bit more dinking and dunking from the Saints, I think, yeah. You're going to see.
I think, you know, it almost, if you want to go back to the first thing, it's almost like he's got that arthritic shoulder where it took him at least a quarter to get the shoulder warmed up, and then he was able to kind of contain it and throw it through the rest of the game. But I think the issue's going to happen is, you know, if his shoulder wore out at, what was it, about 13, week 12 last year, you know, I'm worried. And I think it, I think what we can see last night, unfortunately, is the I hate to say it, but the end of a brilliant, hopefully a brilliant career. But other than that, no, I think it was a great game. It was fun to watch, and I'm going to keep watching every week.
Appreciate the phone call. Doc, have a great day, brother.
All right.
Doc joining us there on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. You can give us a call, 337-706-0111. I want to hear from you, members of the Houdat Nation. Doc does bring up a good point with Breeze. There is that concern about the zip. Like, he's not going to be able to make the throw that Deshaun Watson made for their go-ahead touchdown. He just doesn't have that zip. But they run the offense so well that they can kind of hide Drew's arm strength slipping a little bit. That's what they've been doing in New England. Okay? Tom Brady's not throwing the ball down the field like he was Aaron Rodgers. Okay? He's just not. Or even throwing it as far as, say, Cam Newton could. That's not their game. You surround them with reliable pass catchers. The Saints have that. Ted Ginn Jr., we've talked about it all summer, that he was going to be key for this team. We know Michael Thomas is the $100 million man, $61 million guaranteed. They locked him up. They bring in Jared Cook. After the first quarter and a half, Jared Cook was not a factor. The Texans did a very good job of kind of taking him out. So they started keying on Jared Cook a little bit, and what did that do? Michael Thomas, more than 100 yards receiving. Ted Ginn Jr., more than 100 yards receiving. Alvin Kamara, 160 all-purpose yards. Kamara was huge last night. I wrote on the 103.7 The Game blog my game story saying, you know, player of the game, I gave it to Alvin Kamara. And you could easily have gave it to Drew Brees. I understand that. You could have gave it to Will Lutz. Kamara came up big in small moments that ended up paying off big time for the Saints. Sometimes it's not the flashiest thing. He didn't even score a touchdown last night. It didn't matter. Did not matter. And Drew Brees said as much in last night's press conference. This is what number 9, who ended up throwing for 370 yards, had to say about his starting running back and how big of an impact he made on last night's game.
His that one run he made when we got backed up, I think after the holding call, was pretty impressive. You know, in the fourth quarter, he made some great plays, you know, really all game long, both in the run game and the passing game. So yeah, having a guy like him is good for me.
I love it. Having a guy like him is good for me. Yeah, that's one way of saying it. I am back to Doc's point though, is this. If they can develop the running game even more so and keep that going, that could alleviate some of the pressure off of Drew Brees. I mean, that's what you're kind of hoping for, is have the running attack do that. That way you're not depending on Drew as much, and you can just worry about running the ball. And look, they did a good job. They did not run the ball very well early on, but in the second half, the Saints did a very good job at running the football. Did a very good job. I tell you who else who did a really good job. Can we give it up to Ryan Ramczyk? Did you hear J.J. Watt's name called at all last night? If you were watching on television or listening to the game right here on 103.7 The Game, you heard his name called once when he pressured Drew Brees on that interception that Brees threw to the defensive lineman. You didn't hear J.J. Watt at all. J.J. Watt did not record a tackle. One of the most feared defensive players in the National Football League was matched up all night against the Saints right tackle, Ryan Ramczyk. And Ramczyk shut his butt down. Plain and simple. That's a one-on-one matchup that the Saints' third-year right tackle won. J.J. Watt is a multiple defensive player of the year. Multiple times he's won that award. He's revered as one of the best pass rushers and best defensive players in this league. And he was a non-factor. Not a factor whatsoever. Ramczyk ate him up. That cat is a stud. Absolute stud. When you can take out one of the best players in the National Football League and make him a non-factor, yeah. You're doing something right. You're absolutely doing something right. I mean, he was not a factor. You did not, with the exception of the one play where he forced Drew Brees out of the pocket and Brees threw on his run, and that's when he threw the interception, no J.J. Watt. None whatsoever. Let's head back out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Welcome on our next caller. It's Jay. Good morning to you, Jay. How are you doing this morning, my friend?
I'm doing well after the victory. I'm hearing you talking about Watt, J.J. Watt, but I want to say one thing on the other side. Hendrickson, what a good game for him to get two sacks.
Oh, yeah.
I'd like to see him to get – hopefully he'll get more PT after this performance. Also, I'm going to hang up and hear your thoughts. Like I said, just one game, you know, Watt. How much you think that had to do with Clowney not in the lineup anymore? And I'm going to hear your thoughts. Thank you.
Appreciate the phone call, Jay. Yeah, remember when we were told losing Jadeveon Clowney wasn't going to affect the Houston Texans? Wrong. You don't lose a guy 2 weeks before the start of the season that's a good player, is a good pass rusher. You just, they don't grow on trees. Case in point, look how much Marcus Davenport has struggled for the New Orleans Saints. They traded up to get him because they thought he had potential to become a great, great pass rusher in the National Football League. He is still struggling. He struggled last night against the run, by the way. Cam Jordan took a couple years to, you know, struggled. Jadeveon Clowney needed a couple years to kind of find his way. He is a consistent, good pass rusher who's also good against the run. Okay? Is Jadeveon Clowney as good as J.J. Watt? No. Not on the same level. That's okay. J.J. Watt is kind of a generational talent. Jadeveon Clowney is a Pro Bowl caliber player. Those guys, especially pass rushers, do not grow on trees. And for the Texans to have as much arrogance as they did to believe that they could just find someone else, I mean, it worked out well for them on the offensive side when they traded for Laremy Tunsil, Mr. Gas Mask himself, and then got former New Orleans Saints Kenny Stills, both of those guys in the trade with the Miami Dolphins. But just to think that Clowney was going to, you know, that they were just going to find another cat off the street, that they were just going to, you know, say, hey, RP3, let's get it. Let's do this. Not how it works. Not whatsoever. Let's head back out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Oh, I knew he was going to give us a call this morning, and I'm happy about it. It's our guy, Halftime. Halftime, good morning to you, brother. How are you doing today?
Oh, good morning. Good morning. I'm feeling a little better after I took my blood pressure pills this morning. I'm better. I want to make a comment on the game, my little take on it, what I see. As far as the offense, I think the offense is going to be a whole lot better. There was a good defense, and you got to think about it. There was a lot of rust because Drew Brees basically didn't even play the preseason. He, you know, did a couple of snaps, but he didn't even play. So, you know, it was a lot of rust going on with Drew Brees and, the, you know, the team as a collective. And, I think as far as for the defense, even though it doesn't look like it, still got work to do in our secondary. But I think our front line is awesome. If that had been any other quarterback, it would have been way more sacks than what they did get. A lot of stuff, I mean, I'm a Deshaun Watson fan. I'm a Who Dat fan. But I like Deshaun Watson. I always did like him. And a lot of that stuff, that kid, he has a lot of heart and a lot of stuff. It was just athleticism that got him out of it. If that had been any other quarterback, that would have been done. It would have been sacked. You can see that. So I'm pleased with the defense, even though it gave me a little heartache last night. Looking at it, I think, you know, majority of the front lines in the league that little trouble, I noticed. But any other quarterback, a pocket quarterback, they're going to kill him. They're going to kill him. And the run game, again, I think it'll just – I think they could have stopped the run. I wish they did a little bit on the run game, but they didn't do terrible. And, again, on the offense, I think it just knocked the rust off. And it's going to be a whole lot better. That's all I got, guys.
Halftime, appreciate you, brother. Have a great day. Halftime brings up a couple good points. First of all, Deshaun Watson, 20 of 30, 268 yards, three passing touchdowns, one pick. He also rushed for 40 yards and a touchdown. So he's exactly right, athletic ability. He was sacked six times, six, and he still was able to score four touchdowns. I like what I see out of the front seven. There is question marks with Sheldon Rankins being, you know, out, and then they lost Okafor in free agency. He walked, and Onyemata has to be sidelined because of disciplinary reasons. So, yet they still got to Deshaun Watson, one of the most athletically gifted quarterbacks in the league. Once again, I'm not a Houston Texans fan, but I am a fan of what I see from Deshaun Watson. That kid can straight out ball, plain and simple. And halftime's right. If it was any other quarterback, it would have been 10 sacks. If you sit back in the pocket like a classic drop-back passer, the Saints were able to get after him and pressured. They also did a lot more blitzing that I was not expecting. And because they blitzed as much as they did last night, I think that left them suspect on the back end. Look, DeAndre Hopkins is one of the top three wide receivers in the game. He went off, eight catches for 111 yards. Okay. Hopkins is going to get his. Yeah, you're not going to stop him. He's going to get his. Wasn't thrilled about the 180 yards rushing, okay, that they gave up, but defense will take a little while to get moving. But Watson, immensely athletic, got to tip your cap to him. We got to take a moment, take our cap off, so to speak, because we got to take a quick timeout. When we come back, more Saints talk right here on RP3 and Company. You're listening to Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. We are broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also simulcast on Stadium Network 32.1, and you can find us on LES Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. Woo! Who dats? What a way to start off the season. 30-28 win over the Houston Texans. Lewis, give me the sound one more time. Give it to me again. Give me the game winning. Give the people out there listening to RP3 and Company that beautiful sound of Will Lutz kicking the game winning 58-yard field goal.
A hero here for these fans. 58-yard attempt for the win! Got it!
That just makes you feel warm and fuzzy inside, doesn't it? Woo! 58-yard field goal, Will Lutz, the hero of the night. Saints open up the 2019 season with a 30-28 win over the Houston Texans. We're going to put the Saints conversation on hold. We're going to get some college talk as well, guys. We'll do that coming up next. LSU Tigers, UL Raging Cajuns. Woo! Week three of the college football season. We're going to dive in coming up right here on RP3 and Company on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parch III talks sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. Two-time Super Bowl winning quarterback Eli Manning.
You know, it's my job to do my job as best I can, but to be a good teammate. You know, I've always been great in the quarterback room, helping everybody out.
former LSU and Saints star wide receiver Devery Henderson.
To get that opportunity, man, and get that call on draft day, seeing that 504 number, it was something else, man. When I got that call, man, it was real humbling, and being able to play for Maine State and be still close to home.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
Good morning. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. I am your host, Raymond Parch III. Louis Prejean is the producer extraordinaire. Day two, and he's killing it. Woo! We are broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Also simulcast on Stadium Network 32.1. That's free over-the-air, 24-hour sports coverage. You can also find us, though, on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. Wow. 30-28 victory last night. Saints win a season opener for the first time since 2013. Drew Brees, 370 yards, overcame some early stumbles, including his first red zone interception since 2017. Scoreless first quarter, the Saints only manage 3 points in the first half. They're down 14-3. Bill O'Brien coached Texan teams have only lost 3 times when leading at half. They made it 4 last night. Turned around, offense got rolling there in the second half, in particular in the third quarter. Got it together. Drew Brees started finding his mojo. They couldn't stop Michael Thomas. Ted Ginn. Michael Thomas goes over 100 yards receiving. Ted Ginn Jr., the ageless wonder at 34 years old, went over 100 yards receiving, came up big on that last drive as well that set up the game-winning field goal. Unnecessary roughness call against DeAndre Hopkins after he suplexed, to use a wrestling term, for you listeners out there that aren't familiar with the sport of men in spandex, a suplex essentially being slammed to the ground. That was an additional 15 yards after the interception, the one lone mistake that Deshaun Watson made in last night's game. Saints made him pay for it. Hopkins, 15-yard penalty on top of it, set up a short field. Boom, go-ahead touchdown. That was the Traquan Smith touchdown. There you go. There's a guy that stepped up, made a big play when he was called upon last night. Will Lutz, the Saints get the ball. They go back down again. They kick a field goal. They go up by 6. Texans have no timeouts. But then credit to Deshaun Watson and the Houston Texans offense. They went the length of the field in 2 plays, only needed like 7 or 8 seconds. Kenny Stills, the former New Orleans Saint wide receiver, made him pay scoring in the middle of the field there in the end zone. But with one timeout and less than 30 seconds to go, Drew Brees, that's all the time he needed. Texans went to prevent defense. Drew Brees made him pay. Underneath throw, first down. Underneath throw, first down. Underneath throw, not a first down, but take the final timeout. Bring out Will Lutz, who came out there and booted the game-winning 58-yard field goal. And just like that, the Saints open up the season with a W. With a W. We got a new poll question up. Currently at 1037thegame.com. It's all about the Saints, ladies and gentlemen. And we need your votes. Hey, you know what? Vote. Tell your friends to vote, coworkers. Hey, if you're just randomly picking up something at the convenience store on your way to work, tell the cashier, hey, go to 1037thegame.com. They got a great poll question. You should check it out. That's right. New poll question. What impressed you the most about the Saints' win over the Houston Texans? Defense getting 6 sacks? Drew Brees throwing for 370 yards? Or Will Lutz's 58-yard field goal? Those are your 3 choices. You can go to 1037thegame.com right now and vote as much as you'd like. Tell your friends, tell your mom, your dad, your auntie, your Mimi, your pop, whoever else. Yesterday's poll question, got the final results for that. After his performance against Texas, is LSU quarterback Joe Burrow a legit Heisman Trophy contender? 80% of you said yes. Not surprising. And I actually would agree with that. All joking aside. But we've done so much on the Saints. Let's talk a little college. Week 3 for both LSU and the UL Raging Cajuns. Not exactly a week of immensely difficult competition. LSU, after going on the road and defeating Texas, their first win against an AP top 10 team in program history on the road that was not in the SEC. They're back at home taking on the Demons of Northwestern State University, who have already lost to a Division II school this year. Coach Ed O, though, he said, hey, he's actually looking forward to his Tigers taking on his alma mater, where he played for 4 years as a defensive lineman in the late 70s and early 80s.
I'm looking forward to Northwestern, the place that I got my degree, and I'm very, very appreciative of that. The best thing that ever had at Northwestern, I got my degree, and I network. And I network, and I met some people, and I got to get into college coaching, and for that, I am very, very appreciative. Not going to be appreciative about a Saturday night, but I'm appreciative of it. Coach Lair's doing a tremendous job. His daddy was our coach. He's a great young coach. I wish him the best for two Saturdays when they play us and when they play the Cowboys.
I love that. Looking forward. That's where I got my degree. Him and Bobby Hebert. Best friends, by the way. College roommates. The Cannon and Bebe. Can you imagine the type of fun? I just imagine how much Ed Orgeron and Bobby Hebert, best friends and college roommates, two kids from the Bayou up in Natchitoches, how much they enjoyed collegiate life. I'll leave it at that. There should be a 30 for 30 on that. Bebe and Bobby. I can hear it now. Coach O, at yesterday's weekly press conference, talked also about the offensive line. Look, there were question marks about the offensive line, about how much more they needed to improve, because last year, that's what kind of held LSU back. The offensive line struggled. They had to deal with injuries, but they also dealt with inconsistent play and a lack of top-notch blocking on that side of the ball, and they struggled to keep Joe Burrow clean. And this is what Coach O had to say about his offensive line's performance against Texas.
Yeah, we gave up two sacks. One, we slid the protection, cut to the end. He beat us. And the one of the protections we had, we were supposed to abort. He didn't abort. He stepped inside. The guy comes around and beats him. So we need to get better in pass protection from our backs. But we'll say this to you. Clyde had a great block on that third down and 17. That backer was blitzing up the middle. He blocked him, gave Joe a little way to throw the football, and it was the winning play of the game.
Winning play of the game. Now that a couple days have passed, Coach O was asked what stood out to him from the second half of a game that became an absolute video game-like shootout. And this is what Orgeron had to say.
We're back running the ball, obviously. We didn't get a pass rush. We were going to what we call a bull rush with the inside guys and not let him run out the pocket, but it didn't work. And when that doesn't work, you don't have a good pass rush. So, you know, we had some good rushes on the edge, not so good rushes on the edge. We weren't able to get off a block and make the plays on eligible that we did. So that was the first thing. We do it again, I'd go ahead and rush him the whole time. We had some mistakes in coverage. I mean, we had some mistakes on inside coverage, how we played coverage. They had some good schemes, but we should have taken away. We didn't. We misjudged the ball. We made some mistakes in alignment and leverage, and they made some big plays. But you know what? They were a good football team. They had some good athletes. They're going to make plays. It just seemed that we couldn't stop them at all, and nothing was working.
Couldn't stop them at all, and nothing was working. That's what Coach Ed O had to say about the second half of last week's game against the University of Texas. What about his kicker? You know, they had a hell of a kicker last year, Cole Tracy, All-American. Came out of nowhere, out of Assumption College, to rewrite the LSU record books. And they got a young man, a freshman, Cade York, and he's been, he's been quite good. This is what his head coach had to say about his performance on the road in Austin on Saturday.
You know, Cade has a very strong leg. That ball gets up in the air very fast, and the speed of his kick is phenomenal. We brought Bobby April in as a consultant to look at every one of his kicks with Coach Mack. I do believe they made some corrections in his footwork, and the guy works on it very hard. He's a smart young man. I'll give you an example. And I said this after the game. He didn't practice all week. He had a hip flexor. He didn't practice all week and went do that in front of that crowd. So we feel like we got us a great kicker.
They feel like they got themselves a great kicker, and they'll have him for years. Yeah, Cade York has been outstanding so far for LSU. He's been that good. Coach O also gave some updates concerning one player in particular, as well as the defense. Start off with Ed Ingram. You remember Ed Ingram, four-star prospect, started 12 games at guard as a true freshman back in 2017. But then he was arrested on two counts of aggravated sexual assault in Dallas County, Texas in August of last year. And he was suspended before the opener for a violation of team rules. And the university is still letting legal proceedings play out before bringing him back in full capacity. LSU, though, is expected to know the status of Ed Ingram and possibly him being reinstated based on his actual case. Once again, he's been subpoenaed to appear in court for trial on September 16th, with pretrial proceedings beginning on September 13th. This is what Coach Ed Orgeron had to say about his former four-star offensive lineman, Ed Ingram.
With Ed Ingram, we are hearing things. Nothing's been official. We're hearing things are going to be positive. We're hearing that we may hear something this week, but I don't know. That thing is going on for such a long time. I don't know. Till we get the final say-so, we can't confirm anything.
Can't confirm anything. So they're waiting. They're hopeful that he can be cleared to come back to the team and play. And if they do that, then they have some quality depth and a guy who is, you know, was a starter as a true freshman in the SEC. Coach O also, during his weekly press conference yesterday, provided some updates, injury updates in particular, on LSU's vaunted defense.
You're not going to see Glenn Logan or Rashard Lawrence. I don't know if any one of them are going to be ready for the game. Kellerman is questionable. He'll be in a boot. You'll see him in a boot today. But he could be available for the game. I need to find that out. But the rest of the guys are going to be okay, I think.
They're not going to rush any of those guys back. Why? They're a little banged up. Take the week off. They're playing Northwestern State. No offense to the Demons. And we'll have the voice of the NSU Demons, Patrick Netherton, joining us on tomorrow's show. Okay, helping us give a preview about what the Demons are doing this season up in Natchitoches. But, look, this is going to be a game that backups, second team, third team guys are going to get a ton of playing time. If you have starters, guys that can possibly play at the next level, you're going to need those guys for a stretch run. You're going to need those guys to be healthy. You're not going to throw them out there against Northwestern State. It's not any disrespect to the Demons. You're just not going to do it. That said, Coach O said that he understands that Northwestern State plays at a lower level of football. He understands that they may be struggling losing to a Division II program. But he made sure he let everyone know yesterday during his weekly press conference that this is going to be a red-letter game for Northwestern State.
You know, every time you play LSU, it's going to be their red-letter game, and especially in Northwestern. They're going to play in Tiger Stadium. So they're going to play lights out. They're going to play their best ball. And look, I've been watching TV. I've seen a lot of upsets, and I had one against Troy, so nobody has to warn me again about this. So we're going to be ready. I promise you that. We're going to practice hard. Our team is going to be reminded of that. Yes, we plan on playing guys that would normally not play if we can, but we're going to go in there with our first team, and we're going to be ready to go for 60 minutes. If it's a toe-to-toe game, it's a toe-to-toe game. If not, we'll be prepared.
They'll be prepared. Coach O learned his lesson from the Troy loss. They'll be prepared, and the second team will go up there and score a bunch of points against Northwestern State. Coach O and company got the huge win on the road last week against number 9 Texas. This week, back home at Tiger Stadium, going to take it a little bit easier as they take on the Northwestern State Demons. You can listen to that game, though, right here on 103.7 The Game. Pre-game, 4:30. Kickoff, 6:30 on Saturday, right here on 103.7 The Game. We got to take a quick timeout. When we come back, Raging Cajun football talk. Billy Napier right here on 103.7 The Game, Acadiana Sports Station. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. We are broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also simulcast on Stadium Network 32.1, and we're available on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. LSU will be taking on Northwestern State this Saturday. The UL Raging Cajuns are coming off a victory themselves, their first of the year, as they bested the Fighting Hugh Freezes, the Flames of Liberty University, there in front of a immense crowd of 16,000 people. Sorry, 16,000. Hey, ladies and gentlemen, that's a hint of what my rant of the week's going to be on Friday. Just letting you know now. 16,000? For real? That's only Tuesday. I cannot work myself up. Cannot do that. As I halftime said earlier, had to make sure to get the blood pressure right. Raging Cajuns do get the victory against Liberty, and they did so by racking up 407 yards on the ground. They were absolutely unstoppable with the rushing attack, Regis, Calais, and Mitchell. This is what head coach Billy Napier had to say at his weekly presser yesterday about the run game versus Liberty.
Well, I mean, there's no question when you rush the ball that effectively, lots of players are doing their job. You know, certainly up front, I thought we did a really good job covering them up. Very decisive, one-cut, violent, physical runs by the backs, and some of them popped. And it may get overlooked, but I thought our receiver group did an outstanding job, you know, blocking the perimeter. Great effort on the backside. You could see on Trey's run in particular, you know, where those guys showed up out of nowhere and made the difference in the run breaking.
Yeah, they were tremendous. The run blocking was absolutely outstanding for them. Defensively, they also did a very good job. Now, they gave up two quick touchdowns to start off the game. They also gave up a 66-yard touchdown run, okay, and that helped skew the stats, the rushing stats. But Billy Napier was pleased with what he saw from the Raging Cajuns defense on Saturday.
You know, they got half of their offense in the first possession in that one play. And outside of that, I thought it was a pretty dominant performance by our defense. They were 2 for 11 on third down, you know, and basically played in four down mode the entire second half. So we need to improve in how we start. 2 weeks in a row, the opponents got the ball and marched right down the field for a touchdown. So starting fast on defense in particular is an area that we're focused on. But I think you're right. You know, we need to improve our run fits.
Need to improve a little bit on the rushing defense. Coach Napier further elaborated a little bit on those slow starts, because now they've had back-to-back weeks of slow starts against Mississippi State and against Liberty, and they've played better in the second half. It's as if they wake up a little bit. This is what Coach Napier had to say about those slow starts.
I think we've got to fix it, you know, and I think we're going to spend time trying to resolve that. Not, I mean, you quality control everything that you do. This will be no different. If I knew, we would have got it fixed Saturday. So I think it's an area on our team where we're going to make an emphasis and a point of it and try to start a little bit better for sure.
Going to try to start a little bit better for sure. Right now, at this point of the season and this week, Billy Napier said they're just focused on the little things, correcting those little things, getting better at little things.
We're to a point now where I hope we were mature enough as a program where we prepare – you know, with the big picture in mind, you know, with the ending in mind, how much progress we need to make, how much improvement that we need to make if we're going to be who we want to be, if we're going to go where we want to go. So big picture right now, it's all about improvement. We're trying to have more precision. We're trying to have more detail, more discipline. You know, I think that in general, we've had a really good attitude. I think the effort, the toughness, the physicality is there. It's those little things that, you know, we're focused on right now.
Focused on little things. And up next, Texas Southern out of the SWAC. And look, don't let the 0-2 record fool you, says Billy Napier. They got a ton of Power 5 transfers on that team. This team has talent that the Cajuns are going to host on Saturday.
Yeah, no, there's no question. This team that we play, Coach McKinney and his staff, they've done a terrific job. You can see, I mean, we've watched their personnel from last year. They've made significant progress in their offseason in the first two games. They're much more disciplined. They're playing with really good effort. And they've got some skill players where they can score on you in a hurry. You know, we're talking about a quarterback that played in Florida State, a couple of receivers that played at Michigan State, Baylor, Texas State. You know, they've added probably six or seven transfers to their team that makes them really talented. So, you know, they've got their weapons, and we're going to have to be well prepared to defend.
Texas Southern, UL, Saturday, 6:30 at Cajun Field. We got to take a timeout. When we come back, we'll talk to Jarrett Rozier of TigerDetails.com. He'll join us right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. We are broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Also simulcast on Stadium Network 32.1. And you can find us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. Let off the last couple segments talking about college, both LSU and UL. We're going to keep that going here with our next guest. He is a recruiting analyst, reporter extraordinaire for TigerDetails.com. He joins us every Tuesday. It's our good friend, the one and only, the best dressed reporter in the state of Louisiana, our good friend Jarrett Rozier. Jarrett, how you doing this morning, brother?
I'm doing well, man. You know, we were texting earlier this morning. I'm trying to shake back on not a ton of sleep, but I'm so impressed with you coming back from the dome to kick this show off earlier this morning. I know it helps you have the private helicopter and whatnot to get you back and forth and around the state, but I mean, tight turnaround for you from that crazy one in New Orleans to be on the air sharp as always this morning.
I appreciate that. It was also appreciative of our governor because he came to the game, which meant the elevator were preoccupied after the game, my friend, and you already know what that means.
Yeah, you were probably there pretty late waiting on that thing.
Oh, we're talking with Jarrett Rozier. He works for TigerDetails.com. He's a recruiting analyst and reporter extraordinaire. Look, not a lot to report on the recruiting front, but there I do want to get your reaction on a few things, Jarrett. And let's start with Quincy Brown, the young man, the wide receiver out of Destrehan. He's part of the 2021 class. He decommitted from Mississippi State already. I mean, the season just began, and all of a sudden now he's decommitted. Is that because Quincy Brown could be in the mix now for LSU, and he got to see just how many touchdown passes Joe Burrow loves throwing to wide receivers? What's going on there with Quincy, man?
Yeah, it's interesting because it was a pretty brief commitment. I mean, you and I were just talking about that commitment, what, 3-4 weeks ago? I mean, it was mid-August. And so I think even then he was torn enough between Mississippi State and LSU, and there was still just a lot of uncertainty in his recruitment in a lot of different ways that I was kind of, I was interested to see him announce a commitment date and then ultimately announce a commitment to Mississippi State. And I wasn't sure that it would hold over the long haul. I certainly thought it would be something that that lasted a little bit longer than it did, and might get into next off season and see how some classes shake up, including LSU's and and what the conversations are like with some of those programs at that point. But I was pretty surprised when I saw the announcement come, middle of last week that he was decommitting. And I do think it's going to be interesting to watch for LSU. He's been one of the wide receivers for that 2021 class that the Tigers have been in conversations with for a long time. It's a pretty deep crew of wide receivers, both in Louisiana and out of state, that the Tigers are looking at. They've got four committed right now for 2020, but as you can see with the direction, the way the offense is going, they're going to be looking to have pretty much three guys probably any given year, if not four, because they're looking to pass the ball a lot more to those wide receivers, as we've seen the past couple of weekends on Saturdays, and they want to pass the ball to a lot of different wide receivers. And so he's going to be a guy that I think will be interesting to watch, for the next year and a half with LSU, to be potentially in that mix for that 2021 class. But there's going to be a lot of competition for those spots in that class as well. When you look at other guys like a Chris Hilton or a Brian Thomas, Malik Nabers there locally in Lafayette, Teddy Knox, the Southern Lab prospect who just moved out to Houston for his senior year. Latrell Neville is another guy who's out in the Houston area but originally from New Orleans, and the list kind of goes on because a lot of people are excited about the way Joe Burrow and company are throwing the football right now and what that could mean for them for the years to come once they finish high school.
We're talking with Jarrett Rozier of TigerDetails.com. He joins us on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. I want to ask you about Joel Williams. He had at one point announced plans to commit, and I want to say he was supposed to be committing yesterday, and I know you've been kind of reporting on this, and then he backed off on that date, and he still has some plans, including taking some visits, including an LSU game. What's going on with Joel Williams? Who's in the mix for him? Who are the leaders in the clubhouse, so to speak, and why do you think he backed off on his commitment date?
Yeah, I just don't think Joel was ready. I think honestly, what we saw with Quincy, and then what we've seen kind of with Joel is some of the stuff that for folks that get kind of frustrated with recruiting and just some of the back and forth and uncertainty, I think are a couple of pretty good examples. I think Joel was being pushed for a September 9th commitment date, and he's been someone that's been really torn throughout the recruiting process. Obviously, he was committed to Florida there for a while, committed over the summer, and then decommitted when an Alabama offer came, and both of those programs still loom pretty large. He still mentions LSU as a program to watch, but obviously LSU's class for this year is pretty full, and we've talked a lot about the fact that running back and offensive line have to be pretty big priorities for the Tigers in finishing out this class, and neither one of those is the position Joel plays. Obviously, wide receiver, defensive back guy, and they're doing pretty well in those regards for this class. And then he's actually, of late, had Kentucky come on really strong, and it was interesting to talk to him about some of this because he had that September 9th date. His mom's birthday was yesterday. And after his teammate Major Burns committed to LSU on his mother's birthday, I think some people talked about how that would be kind of a cool thing if he was able to make a decision by that point. And then he's got a lot of other people that are just kind of pressing him to commit to one school or another. I know there was a lot of excitement when that Bama offer came, but you could tell when I was talking to him, he was just still really torn, really eager to take some visits for some games this fall, including that LSU at Alabama game in early November, but also wants to see Auburn, wants to see Oregon, and wants to see Kentucky. And a guy that you and I have talked a lot about for months now, a little bit on the air, but certainly a lot off, and just what's going on there, Kelvin Joseph going to Kentucky appears to have the attention of some other Louisiana guys, including Joel. He said when Fat went to visit that he was just blown away by the program at Kentucky, the direction that some of the facilities and the program as a whole were going. And obviously Fat is now up in Lexington, and it seems like that's a direction that some other Louisiana prospects are maybe considering a little bit more heavily than is traditionally the case.
It only takes one guy, right, Jarrett? That's all it takes. It takes one guy to kind of break through and be like, hey, this is a cool place. This is going to be a good fit for me, for other cats to take notice.
Yeah, and, you know, the Wildcats added Amani Gilmore from a meet, the quarterback, for that championship team this past year. And when Monty was locked in with the Wildcats, you started to see Devontae Lee, who ended up at LSU, and some other guys start to really enjoy this idea of, I think the coaching staff up there is doing a good job of selling it, but when you have a guy or two that are well-respected and well-liked and other players really like to be around them, play with them, and things like that, when you have the right guys that can be kind of influential, that's certainly a huge help for a program out of state to try and convince guys to come to a place where there haven't been a lot of Louisiana guys. And having that one or two can be big. And you saw Devontae be probably a little bit more torn with it than even people realized for a while there down the stretch, which obviously that would have been huge for Kentucky to actually pull somebody away from LSU. It's a little bit of a different situation with Joel, and so I think Kentucky is very much in the mix, depending on just how these visits go, how some of the things go with these other schools' classes. I think Kentucky is something that's very much on his radar, but for a while now I thought Alabama, after the reaction to that offer, was kind of the team to beat. So I'll be interesting. I think that'll be kind of an interesting storyline for the Louisiana recruiting base as a whole. If a guy like Joel Williams that has been, you know, a top 10 to 15 guy in the state ends up selecting Kentucky, particularly if he ends up selecting Kentucky over another SEC power, that could be pretty interesting and noteworthy moving forward, beyond just his own recruitment.
We're talking with Jarrett Rozier of TigerDetails.com. He joins us on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Jarrett, I know you made the trip to Austin. I'm sure you were bored and you did not have a good time whatsoever. But let me ask you, brother, you know, what did the prospects have to say about that? Because I know, you know, you've talked a lot about how the importance of the performance on the field this fall is going to go a long ways of keeping this great recruiting class locked in and continuing that momentum for the following season. So what did the LSU recruits have to say, those commits have to say about the performance they saw in Austin on Saturday?
It was, as you'd expect, a really good response from the recruits, particularly on the offensive side. And we talked a lot about, as you mentioned, the importance coming in to this fall and just kind of seeing some of the things that had been talked about and had been seen a little bit at practice actually playing out on the field on Saturdays against other programs. And I know that there was still some skepticism of the whole LSU is going to have a new offense. People have heard that for years. And I really was so confident this was the year you actually saw a change, regardless of what you had heard not seen happen successfully some of those past years. I don't think there was ever as much hesitance from the recruits, just with the level of conversation that they have with those coaches and those current Tigers. But the way these first two games have gone, I think, have far exceeded anyone's, outside of that program itself, anyone's expectations of what it was going to look like and what it was going to look like as quickly as it had. When you start having comments like T.J. Finley's, the 2020 quarterback commit from Ponchatoula, late Saturday night, that the offense was surgical, that's a little bit out of character from a typical LSU offense, and extremely impressive. 2021 quarterback Garrett Nussmeier, son of former Saints quarterback Doug Nussmeier, said that the offense looked like the offense that quarterbacks dream of playing in. Again, not something you would have ever thought you would hear about an LSU offense until this year. Coy Moore, the recent commitment from Rummel for 2020, was just, so ecstatic throughout the game and then after the game, watching him on Twitter during the course of the game, just kind of poking fun at the people that had questioned his decision to commit to LSU and why would you go to an offense that doesn't throw the ball that much and stuff like that. I think it is a little bit vindicating to him and some of these other guys that any criticism that they heard from opposing program staffs or fan bases or anything like that, that's all kind of in the rear view and that this LSU offense is clearly headed in a new and exciting direction for a lot of these guys. And another one I thought was interesting, probably more so on the other side of the ball, although he's a guy that is Lafayette Christian's Sage Ryan, another guy there locally for you guys. And I'm trying to pull up his exact quote to us because the end of it was interesting to me. He said, "This is a different LSU team than in the past where their strength was running the ball. Now they can pass the ball. This year's LSU team is dangerous. Hashtag hold that tie," which obviously is a little bit of a point to Coach Ed Orgeron's hold that tiger whenever a prospect commits. So Sage kind of having a little bit of fun potentially with some of the recruiting fans to kind of hint at that. But clearly the idea of potentially being a part of this new look LSU team is something intriguing to him and a lot of these other guys, and for good reason. I mean, LSU looks as good as maybe anybody in the country right now, if you look at their early season resume and the direction that things are going.
Jarrett, appreciate your time as always, my friend. Keep up the great work there. And let the people know when is a new story of yours and some new reporting of yours going to be posted.
Yeah, so, I mean, we're still recapping, trying to get a little bit deeper into some of how that performance in Texas played out, getting into some of the individual grades with, in different areas that some of the guys, on defense looking at how did a guy grade out pass rushing, how did a guy grade out coverage, and things like that. That'll be something that we're trying to do, on Tuesdays, most weeks of the season, and particularly for a game the magnitude of Texas, will be kind of still unpeeling that a little bit today and a little bit into tomorrow, and then just kind of starting to look forward into Northwestern State and the rest of the season, because I think the way this past weekend went, there's a lot of hype around LSU for the playoffs and Joe Burrow for potential Heisman consideration, and it's still super early, but I think the early indications are that both of those potentials are for real. And I'll look a little bit more later this week too into some of that Joe Burrow stuff and kind of have a little bit of fun with it too. So a couple pieces to look forward to over these next few days. And I'm excited to get out to a high school game on Friday too. I was already out in Austin this past week, and so I haven't had any real regular season high school action. So I'm looking forward to getting out to a game this Friday, still figuring out which one to get to and maybe getting a little prospect highlight together for the weekend.
Well, brother, keep up the great work, and we'll talk to you soon, my friend.
Yeah, thanks, Ray. Appreciate you. Get some rest later today. I know you're on pretty short sleep.
Could I be drinking a Coca-Cola right now at 7 o'clock, 7:30 in the morning? Yes, I am. Thank you.
Hey, whatever it takes. No excuses. Play like a champion. You are playing like a champion right now.
I need to do the Ed Orgeron and just drink about 5 Red Bulls and smash them against my head. That's what I should do.
Hey, I think the listeners would probably love that. I know personally I would.
Jarrett, brother, I'll talk to you soon, my friend.
Wait a minute.
This is Jarrett Rozier. TigerDetails.com, one of the best recruiting analysts in the game. We're going to take a quick time out. Come back. We're going to talk a little Houston Astros baseball. They just keep winning games by football scores. That's not common, by the way, in case you were wondering. We'll talk about that when we return here on RP3 and Company. You're listening to Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to the show. Real quickly, Houston Astros keep beating teams by football scores. After defeating the Oakland Athletics on Sunday, 21-1, They took care of the Athletics 15-0 yesterday. Yordan Álvarez continues his torrid pace as a rookie, going 2-for-5. Michael Brantley went 2-for-3. Jose Altuve, 3-for-3. By the way, if you want to read a column about Yordan Álvarez being the rookie of the year by our very own C.D. Clint Domain, go to 1037thegame.com right now. Houston Astros baseball back on tonight. Pregame 7. First pitch 7:10. A's at Astros. You can listen to it live right here on 1037 The Game. Coming up, Andrew Juge joins us right here on Acadiana Sports Station. 1037 The Game.
It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parch III talks sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. Legendary Southern University baseball coach Roger Cador.
That 1985 class that I recruited, I told those young men that they were going to be a part of history. What kind of history, I didn't know, but I told them they would be a part of history. And in 1987, they go out and beat Cal State Fullerton, which was the history I was talking about.
LSU national champion and Super Bowl champion Marlon Favorite.
It made me feel comfortable to go to work every day at LSU, knowing that he embraced my passion and my love for music as well. We had fun. We were freestyling locker room. Coach Miles would come and dance.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
A hero here for these fans. 58-yard attempt for the win! Got it!
Oh, that's never going to sound old. That's never going to sound old. Good morning to you. You're listening to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 1037 The Game. We are broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also simulcast on Stadium Network 32.1. You can also find us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. Who dats? Rejoice. Will Lutz, game winner, 58-yard field goal inside the Mercedes-Benz Superdome to give the New Orleans Saints a 30-28 win over the Houston Texans for their first victory in a season opener since 2013. It's been that long. It was a dramatic game. You thought the Saints had won it when they went up by 6, but then the Texans proved that they didn't need any timeouts, and Deshaun Watson was like, give me about 7 seconds, I'll score, not a problem. But then Drew Brees was given just enough time and one timeout in his back pocket to march his team down the field. It was three straight completions to set up Will Lutz's dramatic 58-yard game winner there on Monday Night Football inside the Mercedes-Benz Superdome. Once again, reminder, today's poll question is up at 1037thegame.com. It is, what impressed you the most about the Saints' win over the Texans? The defense getting 6 sacks of Deshaun Watson, Drew Brees throwing for 370 yards, or Will Lutz's 58-yard field goal. You can go vote right now at 1037thegame.com. Right now, though, we're going to get reaction from this game from our next guest. He's one of the co-hosts of the Saints Happy Hour podcast. He joins us every Tuesday on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. It's our good friend, and let's hope he has a voice. He didn't lose his voice from last night's game. It's the one and only Andrew Juge. Andrew, how are you doing this morning, brother?
Raymond, I'm doing well, man. And, you don't even know where to start with a game like that. But, you know, it's one of those things where I think regardless of whether the reason we started our interest in the sport, whether it's we're covering the team or we're a fan of the team or we're a fan of the league, it's games like this that keep you coming back, you know. And at the end of the day, it wasn't pretty. There's a lot that you can point to that was incredibly frustrating in this game if you're a Saints fan. But ultimately, endings like that are why you believe and why you invest yourself in it. And so it was great to see the Saints on the winning end of it. We've seen them lose that way many times, where the defense just can't hold up in the last minute of the game, and and give up the big touchdown like that. So that was disappointing to see, but obviously the lasting impression that you have is that 58-yard field goal. And, you know, I'm old enough that I saw Morton Anderson make a 60-yarder before halftime against the Bears in the Superdome. And obviously Tom Dempsey had the 63-yarder. I'm not quite old enough for that, but I put this kick right up there with those two in terms of memorable kicks in Saints history. That was one for the ages.
We're talking with Andrew Juge of the Saints Happy Hour podcast. He joins us on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Andrew, let's talk about the start of the game. It was sluggish, I think would be the best way to describe it for the Saints, in particular their offense. Drew Brees throws his first red zone interception since 2017. Hell, he didn't throw an interception in the first seven games last year. And he throws one. They're down 14-3 at the half. What changed? I was there at the press box, and I have my own thoughts. But for your perspective being there, what changed for the Saints after halftime?
You know, I don't think much changed offensively other than they started to capitalize and score points. But I did feel like they were moving the football. You know, right. It was one of those things where even at halftime it was 14-3, but you felt like the Saints were moving the ball, and it was just a matter of getting a little bit more consistency, and they were going to be able to score some points. You know, Alvin Kamara and Michael Thomas obviously were doing their thing in the first half, and you know, I don't even really have a problem with the interception, with the decision where I think if Brees lost the ball a little bit more, Murray's open, and that's probably a touchdown. It was just a terrible throw. It was poor execution, but you felt like the Saints were moving the ball a little bit unlucky, obviously, with that whole sequence at the end of the half, which makes the field goal longer than it should have been. And obviously, Lutz misses the kick there. But I think in the second half, the Saints were able to really just utilize Ted Ginn. And that's the thing that maybe really changed a little bit, is he started to become more involved in the offense. And the Texans respected his speed so much that I think the Saints were able to really utilize him underneath and get consistent, easy, quick throws and catches to him to move the chains. So, you know, I think offensively, Brees just got in a rhythm, you know, and he started to get comfortable. The protection all game was outstanding. And really and truly, the one thing that stands out to me as amazing in this game was the play of the offensive line, really from left to right, all five guys. Incredible performance up front. That gave Brees the time to survey the field and make the reads and throws he needed to. And I just thought in that second half, he was absolutely surgical.
We're talking with Andrew Juge of the Saints Happy Hour podcast. He joins us on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Andrew, I want to talk about that offensive line. Ryan Ramczyk, just took J.J. Watt to school. J.J. Watt had no quarterback hurries. He had no tackles. He did not have an impact on that game whatsoever. The only time you even remotely called his name or thought about him was on the Drew Brees interception because he was pursuing Brees. He wasn't pressuring him. He was just pursuing him. Ryan Ramczyk shut down J.J. Watt. How surprising was that to you?
Well, you know, it's funny. Before the game started and all this week leading up to it on the Saints Happy Hour podcast, we talked a lot about matchups. And, you know, I said that this was a statement game for Ryan Ramczyk going in. This is a reference game for him because, you know, I said he's going to have one of the toughest assignments he's ever had and that he'll have maybe all season against J.J. Watt. And we're going to find out if he's a Zach Strief kind of player. And Zach Strief was a very good right tackle for a very long time for the Saints, very solid player that was productive. Or if he's better than that, if he starts to maybe have the potential to be a Willie Roaf type player. Now that may be a little extreme to put him in the category of maybe the best tackle of all time. And the truth may be somewhere in the middle, but the point is he a guy that really could become a multiple time Pro Bowler and potentially down the road have the potential to be a Hall of Famer? Or is he just a nice right tackle that has a nice long career with the Saints and is a guy that we remember in New Orleans fondly? Well, I think after this game, it's very clear that he can be on the Willie Roaf scale. And maybe not quite that good, maybe not a Hall of Famer, but certainly a guy that's going to be a Pro Bowl player for multiple years to come. And I think he showed that this was his coming out game. We already knew the player was good. The Saints voted him as the offensive MVP of last season. But I think what we saw is him really make a statement to ascend even further than that. And so the Saints really have, in my opinion, unquestionably the best right tackle in the NFL based on his performance. Was I surprised? Not really. I mean, I think he's a player that we've come to know is good and expect to get good performances out of him. But to shut out J.J. Watt the way he did was remarkable. And another thing I said leading up to this game was, you know, one thing to look out for in this game is if the Texans start to move J.J. Watt around, that's a sign that Ryan Ramczyk's playing really well and holding up really well because they're trying to get him different matchups to get him going. And we saw that. And so when all of a sudden guys like J.J. Watt are being moved around the field because it's not working where they are from their normal position, then it's pretty clear you got something special at right tackle, and that's what happened.
I'm talking with Andrew Juge of the Saints Happy Hour podcast. He joins us on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Andrew, I want to talk about Alvin Kamara. Didn't score a touchdown, but I can make the argument that he was the player of the game in a lot of ways because during the comeback, he picked up the tough yardage, and he got receptions that helped move the chains, that helped with their comeback. And Drew Brees even talked about how much of an impact Kamara had on the game despite not scoring. Your thoughts on what Alvin was able to bring to the table last night in that comeback?
He was Alvin Kamara. You know, he really was just what we've come to expect from him, which is a dynamic, game-changing running back that's able to run between the tackles, that's able to catch the ball in space and make guys miss.
He ran tough last night, Andrew, especially in the second half.
He did. You know, he's a guy that we've come to expect it. Listen, he's not the biggest back, although he's put on some size. He looks a little bit bigger this year to me in a good way. But he maybe doesn't look as strong as he is, but when you see his balance and his ability to break tackles, there was one play where he was out wide and a corner made a tackle on him, and I was shocked because I've come to expect from watching him now that he's always going to make the first guy miss. And for most of the game, he did that. But another phenomenal performance by Alvin Kamara. You know, it's almost business as usual for him at this point. I don't mean to downplay it, but we've just come to expect that. I mean, he really is a superstar in the NFL, and he played like it. Same with Michael Thomas. You know, I think the Saints rode their horses, and the guys that we expect to have big games offensively showed up and did what they were supposed to. And so that's how the Saints were able to come back and win this game. When you talk about a margin for error, when you're down 14-3 at halftime, really not much can go wrong offensively for you to be able to come back and win that game, and pretty close to a flawless performance offensively in the second half.
We're wrapping things up here with Andrew Juge of the Saints Happy Hour podcast. He joins us on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Andrew, let's talk about defense. You know, no Sheldon Rankins, Okafor left in free agency, and Iwata is starting the year not being able to play for discipline reasons by the league. Yet, despite that, and despite kind of a sluggish start, they got after Deshaun Watson. They got 6 sacks on one of the most athletically gifted quarterbacks in the NFL. Your takeaways on what the front 7 was able to do in pressuring Deshaun Watson, getting pressure on the quarterback, and also the amount of blitzes that we saw.
Yeah, we saw a lot of blitzes. And, you know, I expected the Saints to be able to get some sacks because, honestly, Watson is the most sacked quarterback in the NFL pretty much over the last couple of years. And so he's a guy that you can get to. Now, he's a tremendous athlete. Now, he's slippery. He's going to avoid some of those sacks. But the offensive line, I think, of the Texans is exposable. And then on top of that, I just think Watson's style of play, maybe he holds on to the ball a little bit longer than some quarterbacks. So you can get to him. And I think the Saints at times did a good job with that. Unfortunately, I think when you look at how many injuries they had at defensive tackle, and you talk about Rankins being out and Mario Edwards being injured, on top of that, you had the David Onyemata suspension. He'll be back next week. I just felt like the Saints at defensive tackle were a little light. And so you saw guys like Shy Tuttle and Mitchell Lowen kind of unexpectedly have to play a high number of snaps. And when you see Carlos Hyde, which to me was maybe one of the more concerning things, be able to run the ball as well as he did, that's something that I think really needs to be cleaned up. And so hopefully the Saints will get Onyemata back this week. Hopefully Mario Edwards and Rankins are close behind, because I think that's something that this defense is sorely going to need. That would push guys like Shy Tuttle and Mitchell Lowe to the bench, where maybe they're not playing as much, and I think that would be a huge upgrade for the front seven. But overall, being undermanned as they were, certainly six sacks is a high number, and I think you're happy with that. I think how they held up on the back end in coverage left a lot to be desired, and it's one of those things, Raymond, where I thought the defensive performance was globally pretty disappointing. But here's the thing, you get to learn with a win, and it's one of those things. Last year, the Saints went 13-3. You'll remember how horrible they were against Cleveland in week two. They find a way to win that game thanks to a kicker that missed four kicks. Absolutely did not deserve to win that game. But you don't think about that when at the end of the season, when you're the top seed and you're 13-3 and you've just had a great season. You go back and you look at those games and you think to yourself, yeah, they didn't have a great game, but we're glad we won that one. They won that one because it sets them up for success in the future. So when you have the ability to learn and correct mistakes on the heels of a win, maybe that you didn't deserve or that you were fortunate to get, I think it sets yourself up for more success down the road. And so, yes, the Saints are fortunate to get this win. The defense didn't play up to par, but it's a win nonetheless. You'll take them in any form, and then you just try to build and grow from there.
Andrew, appreciate the insight as always, brother. Enjoy the rest of your week. Get some rest, and we'll talk to you next Tuesday, my friend.
Looking forward to it. Thanks, Raymond.
Andrew Juge of the Saints Happy Hour podcast, breaking down the Saints' 30-28 victory over the Houston Texans. Don't forget to go to 1037thegame.com right now. Vote on our latest poll question. What was most impressive to you about the Saints' victory? Drew Brees' 370 passing yards, the defense getting six sacks of Deshaun Watson, or Will Lutz's 58-yard dramatic field goal? Go vote right now. We got to take a quick timeout. More RP3 and Company coming up right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 1037 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 1037 The Game. We are broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also simulcast on Stadium Network 32.1. And you can find us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. Don't forget, new poll question is up at 1037thegame.com. What impressed you the most about the Saints' win over the Texans? Defense getting six sacks, Drew Brees throwing for 370 yards, or Will Lutz 58-yard field goal? Right now it is a tie between the defense getting six sacks and Will Lutz's 58-yard field goal, 42.9% of the vote going to both of those, with only 14.3% of the vote attributed to Drew Brees throwing for 370 yards. Want to hear your thoughts? You want to comment on the Saints' dramatic 30-28 win over the Houston Texans? Give us a call on the ARCO Equipment Hotline, 337-706-0111. That's 337-706-0111. Love to hear your thoughts on what you saw last night inside the Mercedes-Benz Superdome. Reminder, Prep Power Hour is back at Pete's on Johnston today. The good brother, Ben Love, host of Bumper to Bumper Sports. You heard him back on the airwaves yesterday. He'll be out at Pete's from 4 to 7. This is going to begin consecutive weeks, week after week after week after week of the Pete's Prep Power Hour at Pete's on Johnston. Bumper to Bumper Sports would be broadcasting live right there. This week, Southside High School. That's right. It's going to be all about them Sharks who got that first win of the season, won their season opener, their first varsity win period on Friday against Northside High. Following Bumper to Bumper Sports and the good brother Ben Love broadcasting live from Pete's on Johnston, it will be Athletics at Astros right here on 1037 The Game, your home here in Acadiana for Houston Astros baseball. You're going to only do about 10 minutes of pregame, but then first pitch will start at 7:10. Will the Astros win another game by a football score? Well, you can tune in tonight right here on 103.7 The Game to find out. And then after the completion of A's at Astros, it'll be Tiger Rag Radio. Jeff Palermo and James Moran and the boys will be on there talking all things LSU. Big win versus UT, and then giving you a little bit of a preview with Northwestern State coming to town. Whew. Got a good lineup for you tonight. Good lineup. So just remember, Jordy Holberg Show from 2 to 4 with Uncle Jordy. Then the good brother, Ben Love, kicks off the Prep Power Hour at Pete's on Johnston today. Southside High in the house. That'll be from 4 to 7. And then following that, Athletics at Astros Baseball. And then Tiger Rag Radio. Don't forget, we got Bill Bender coming up shortly from the Sporting News. He'll join us to talk all things college football. His thoughts on the LSU-UT game and much, much more. We got to go quickly out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Doug, thanks for calling, brother. Real quick, I only got like a minute to spare here, man. What are your thoughts and how you doing?
Hey, man, did you hear Davenport's name mentioned last night? One time when Watson was running by him on his way to the end zone.
Yeah.
That's a bust. That's a bust. They're going to need to do something about this guy.
It's
sad. The defense got gas. They did. The running game, they ran against him. They threw against him. Good Lord, man. I think something needs to be done about the defensive coordinator. I don't know if he's the right guy. It was timed when he should have blitzed, when he didn't. Rush when he should have brought the house. I don't know.
Well, I think Doug, a few things there real quickly. I think the game plan was to blitz. I think they thought that gave them the best opportunity to win. But when you do that, you need to expect your guys on the back end to be able to do man-on-man, and they got beat last night. That's the first thing there. Second thing, well, I agree with you.
Right.
I agree with you on Davenport. Right. He's going to have to develop quickly, and if he doesn't, he could be the weak link on that defense, and they may have to make a move and picking up someone via trade or something like that to be able to shore that up, because
the stock is going down on Davenport.
It sure does look that way, brother. It sure does look that way. I appreciate the phone call, Doug. Have a great day, my man.
Thank you, Ray.
Doug, yeah. Marcus Davenport was, once again, not a factor. He's going to have to turn that around quickly if he wants to be a starter for the New Orleans Saints. And they need him to step up and play well. We got to take a timeout. When we return, Bill Bender of the Sporting News joins us to talk all things college football right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. We are broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. That's Stadium Network, free over the air, 24-hour sports coverage. And you can also find us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. We've spent a lot of today's program talking about the New Orleans Saints' dramatic victory over the Houston Texans, and rightfully so, obviously. But, look, week three of college football, the real week three, not what happened back in week zero between Florida and Miami, which we have all tried to forget. But week three of the football season, college football season is in high gear, and there's no better person to talk college football on the national stage than our next guest. He is the esteemed columnist and reporter for the Sporting News. He's our good friend, the one and only Bill Bender. Bill, how you doing this morning, brother?
Hey, I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on.
Well, Bill, can you start? Let's start talking about the shootout that was the LSU-UT game. What were some of your takeaways from that game, watching it from afar, seeing LSU and UT battle in a top-10 matchup there in Austin?
I mean, you know, Joe Burrow is the real deal in that offense. They were able to throw it around. It was one of those fun shootouts. I mean, ABC's done a good job on the Sunday night game, or the Saturday night game, essentially. They've put together two good ones. But I think LSU, I mean, it's
starting to point toward Alabama now, as long as they take care of their business. They've got an offense that is going to challenge Alabama. Anytime you have three receivers go for 100 yards, that's a good thing. And they should feel confident. I mean, Joe Burrow fits well within that offense. And reflect what he was doing in high school up here in Athens. That's good stuff.
We'll try to get Bill Bender back on the line there from the Sporting News. He was talking about the game between LSU and UT, how it was a great kind of shootout, and that ABC's been doing such a good job with picking those great games. And Bill also commented on how, you know, if LSU can continue up at this pace, that it looks like, you know, the next team that's up on the schedule is probably going to be Alabama. Bill, let's step away from LSU and Texas. Give me your thoughts on what you saw from Clemson, Texas A&M. That was supposed to be a far more competitive game. Clemson just proved to be too much for the Aggies.
I thought A&M hung around. I mean, they didn't get murdered in Memorial Stadium or anything. And they just couldn't move the ball. Couldn't run the ball against that Clemson defense. And, you know, Clemson can beat you in multiple ways. They can get in a shootout with you with the weapons they have. They can get in an ugly game, and Dabo probably liked that one because it showed how tough they are on that side of the ball. But, I mean, A&M didn't get crushed or anything. They just had a little bit of trouble moving the ball, and I think they're going to be better for it. They're just a team that plays a tough schedule, and there's not many breaks in it. One of them this week against Lamar, but certainly a team that will compete as long as Kellen Mond stays healthy.
We're talking with Bill Bender of the Sporting News. He joins us on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Bill, the big scare of the weekend, right, for the national teams was the Army-Michigan game, which needed overtime. Look, I'm never one to overreact on these kind of things, especially an early season game. Army has that option attack, which is difficult to game plan for. But your thoughts on Michigan maybe playing down a little bit to Army? Is there anything that you can take away from that, or is it just an early season kind of – maybe they're just looking past the Army?
Well, their offense needs work. If their offense plays like that, they'll lose three or four games.
Really? Wow.
Yeah. I mean, they're too sloppy with the football. Shea was over-sloppy with it. I mean, the test when you play Army is the offense. And Michigan's defense played reasonably well. And, you know, part of the reason for this reaction is because it involves Jim Harbaugh. And I've been telling them they did win the game, and people were acting like they lost. And it's weird. It's funny how that works, because also summer I was asked the question, could Army go in and upset them? And pretty much said, yeah, it could happen. And it didn't happen, and yet people were acting like Michigan loses. And it's 100% because Jim Harbaugh is involved.
We're talking with Bill Bender of the Sporting News. He joins us on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Bill, I usually don't say these kind of things or don't even ask these types of questions, especially for a coach who's only in year two at his job. But what about Willie Taggart at Florida State, and what about Jeremy Pruitt at Tennessee? Because those are two programs that have a rich history, and they are struggling. Either one of those guys – You feel is in danger of not keeping his job after this season, or do you think the administrations are going to be patient with them?
I think you almost have to be patient, but, I mean, I would say whichever one doesn't make a bowl game, keep an eye on, because, you know, at least Florida State won the game. I mean, that wasn't what they wanted, and took an extra point to get there, but they did win the football game, and that's what I was – again, it's kind of the same thing with Michigan. I mean, they did win. Maybe they can take a deep breath, play a little more relaxed on the road at Virginia this week. And who knows? I mean, Florida State's got talent. Tennessee's a tougher one because, you know, they'll win this week against Chattanooga. If they don't, yeah, Pruitt will probably get fired on Monday. But their October schedule, there aren't a lot of wins on the schedule there. So you got to see progress in the second half. Maybe they pick off somebody. But it's not pretty at Tennessee right now. I don't know if there's an easy fix just because of the damage from the last coaching search. So I'm guessing that they would stick it out with Pruitt for a little bit longer and see if it goes somewhere.
We're talking with Bill Bender of the Sporting News. He joins us on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Bill, your thoughts on Lynn Swann resigning as USC athletic director, and does this say anything about their current head coach, and will he remain their current head coach after this season?
That's kind of an interesting juxtaposition, knowing that they're 2-0. They just pounded Stanford, and
yeah.
You know, they're actually ranked. So, I mean, Clay Helton's doing the best he can with a backup quarterback, and maybe he fell into a starting quarterback. And I think, you know, given that we thought they might be, you know, 1-5 or 2-4, I think they're doing the best they can. But, yeah, Lynn Swann resignation is if you get an athletic director, I mean, they can look outside the family. They don't have a history of doing that, but in this case, it might not hurt. Talk about USC, Tennessee, Michigan. All of those programs have something in common that they like to keep it in the family. Well, that doesn't always work, and you have to be willing to try new things. And I think that's something that USC is going to have to take a hard look at before they hire the next athletic director.
Bill, let me ask you, why has it been so chaotic with USC? I mean, you've been doing this for quite a long time. This is a very proud program with tons of tradition, Heisman Trophy winners left and right. And ever since Pete Carroll, they've just struggled, and it's been a bit of a mess. And Clay's doing a good job of what he has, like you said. But why have things been so chaotic with the Trojans?
No, the coaching changes, you know. Sanctions didn't help, and then you go from Lane Kiffin to Sarkisian to, you know, now you're on Clay Helton. There's been interim coaches. I mean, Ed Orgeron was the interim coach for a little bit. This is too many coaching changes. Losing the recruiting base that they shouldn't lose. USC should look like Alabama and Clemson and Ohio State from a roster makeup standpoint, and they don't look like that right now. Better quarterback play. They were pretty good when they had Sam Darnold.
Yeah.
I mean, that's really what it comes down to. They need the quarterback to run that offense. And I think Clay Helton's done a nice job, but last year it bottomed out a little bit. And, you know, that can happen at USC, and they have to accept that. So, again, on the field this year, 2-0. And, you know, the sky isn't falling. The sky can't be falling when you're ranked when people thought you were going to be fired.
I'm wrapping things up here with Bill Bender of the Sporting News. He joins us on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Bill, you know, not a ton of, you know, quote unquote sexy matchups this week for week three, but any of the games intrigue you, maybe kind of under the radar games that people should be paying attention to that you're definitely going to be keeping an eye on this coming weekend?
In Iowa, Iowa State's probably the best we can do right now, but that's fine. You know, that'll be a good game. I think, North Carolina, Wake Forest, Clemson, Syracuse. I mean, there's just not a lot of meat on that. It's very rare that you have a weekend when there's not a matchup between ranked teams. It's really surprising that, you know, they were banking on Clemson, Syracuse to be that, and it just didn't pan out. So, you know, but that means that we'll get more matchups down the line. I think the last weekend there, next weekend, will be pretty good. But, yeah, I mean, if you've got a wedding or to do some yard work or, you know, you want to miss some games this weekend, this is probably the one where you could score some points at home.
I love how you think, Bill. You're like, yeah, you squeeze in a wedding. It's Tuesday. Let's go ahead and get this done. Let's go to the Justice of the Peace. Get it. Make it happen. You know.
Yeah. I mean, take care of that this weekend, because I mean that means that the other ones are the other weekends are probably pretty loaded.
Bill, one final question. We'll let you get out of here with this. We're talking with Bill Bender of the Sporting News on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. I know it's early, and look, we've seen September Heisman winners before, and they don't even make it to New York City. But I'll ask you, you think LSU's Joe Burrow could have a chance of being a Heisman finalist this year?
Yeah, absolutely. He keeps it going in this direction, sure. You know, if we were doing it today, he'd be top five with Jalen and Tua and probably Justin Fields and, you know, take your pick of a Clemson guy, because one of those guys will emerge. And that's what the field looks like right now. I think he's done a fantastic job in that offense. You know, good marriage with what Brady brought over from the Saints, and that fits his skill set, just getting the ball out quick, throwing it to the receivers. I'm telling you guys, I saw him in Athens High School up here in Ohio, and he threw for 67 touchdowns and 2 interceptions his senior year and took a team that had no business being there to a state championship game. So, yeah, Joe Burrow is fully capable of being a Heisman Trophy finalist.
Bill, appreciate your time as always, my friend. Keep up the terrific work over there at the Sporting News, and we'll talk to you soon.
Okay, sounds good. Thank you.
That's Bill Bender, Sporting News, giving us a little bit of national college football perspective there on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Hey, guys, in Louisiana, there are thousands of miles of utility lines and gas pipelines buried just beneath the surface. Sometimes multiple lines are in one area. So if you or a contractor that you've hired is digging a hole to put in a new fence, a pool, or for any other reason, maybe you're building a gazebo, I don't know, you run the risk of hitting an underground line even by digging only a few inches. What happens then? Maybe you only knock the power out for your entire neighborhood. But sometimes there's an explosion with injuries and even death. It happens every single year. And look, there's a very simple way to avoid it. Before you dig, just call 811. Call 811 2 days before you dig. Tell the operator your address, and someone will come out and mark the location of buried lines so you or your contractor can avoid them. Simple, right? It's free of charge, and it's the law. Louisiana One Call operates 811 as a public service, and to promote public safety, Louisiana One Call and 103.7 The Game remind you, call 811 and know what's below before you dig. We got to take our final time out of the day here on RP3 in Company. But we'll wrap things up after these messages. You're listening to Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. Wrapping up things here on today's edition of RP3 in Company, right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. It is a celebratory mood up in the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing today as the Hoodats won their season opener 30-28 over the Houston Texans. Hey, we have a few minutes before we wrap up. If you're listening, you want to give us a call, give us your thoughts on the Saints' big-time victory over the Houston Texans, give us a call on the ARCO Equipment Hotline, 337-706-0111. That's 337-706-0111. We'll put you on the air. We'll have you share your thoughts. Just be nice to Lewis. He's the new producer extraordinaire, Mr. Prejean. That would probably go a long way if you call him and go, Mr. Prejean. He would like that. Saints, tremendous, dramatic victory. They hadn't won a season opener since 2013, guys. They hadn't won a season opener since 2013. And they do it. And they thought they had the game won with a six-point victory. Then the Texans respond, went with that prevent defense, didn't prevent anything. Oh, Deshaun Watson's like, touchdown. Kenny Stills is like, I scored against my old team. What? But then Drew Brees is like, not to worry. I have a timeout in 30 seconds. And I'll just complete three straight passes to set up a 58-yard game-winning field goal by Will Lutz. Let's head out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Welcome on, Brian. Brian, good morning to you, brother. How are you doing? What's on your mind?
I'm doing pretty good. I have to be honest, I'm strictly like a college football guy, but occasionally watch Saints games, you know, sporadically. But after last night, I think I might be actually hooked on the NFL for the first time in my life, especially watching Breeze.
You picked a great game to watch, brother.
Yeah, and it just seems that, you know, I haven't given the NFL enough chance because it seems that Breeze and Peyton really know the rules of football.
Yeah, they absolutely love to throw the football. And that was Brian with the rules of football there. Saints, though, win 30-28. Now, it gets tougher for them. The Texans are a good team. They're a playoff team from a year ago. But now they have to go on the road and play at the Los Angeles Rams. Rematch of last season's NFC Championship game. Then they'll be on the road again versus the Seattle Seahawks, always a perennial playoff team. Always been an adversary, so to speak, of the Saints. And then they'll come back home Sunday night football against the Dallas Cowboys. So this is a bit of a gauntlet to start the season. But the fact that they were able to go out there and get a W in week one is a tremendous way to start the season. And look, they got plenty to work on. Marcus Davenport's got to get it together. He's got to figure out how to play at this level. The defensive secondary, they got to shore that up and not get beat on the man-to-man coverage so much as well. Okay? But everything else is there. Michael Thomas, midseason form, Alvin Kamara, Drew Brees, they all look good. The play calling looks good as well. So they're in good shape, 1-0 to start the season. We're going to head back out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline and quickly welcome on Chad. Chad, good morning to you, brother. I only have a minute to spare, man. What you got?
What up, Big Daddy? Man, look, I was in Austin for the LSU game, man. My wife's a grad, so we went there. Man, great things about LSU. I'm concerned about a couple things, man. It's the running back issue about that. If Leonard Fournette is our second-best running back, I'll have kind of questions about that. I don't know if the other guys – where's Chris Curry been? And our two guys, the number one running back in the nation. Is he not just picking up the playbook, man? Maybe y'all can find out some information about that in the next coming week or so. Thank you, man.
Appreciate the phone call, Chad. Chad's right. Those running backs kind of disappeared in that shootout. I'd expect Chad to see a lot of all four of those running backs the next few weeks against Northwestern State, Vandy, and then Utah State. You're going to see a lot of running the football the next couple weeks. We got to get out of town. I want to thank Jarrett Rozier, Andrew Juge, and Bill Bender for joining us as our guests. I want to thank all of our callers, all six of them. Y'all have a great day out there. Be kind to one another, and we'll talk to you tomorrow. You're listening to Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game.